Hello and welcome to the Confessions of a Band Director podcast, episode 2, for August 9th, 2008. We are getting ready for band camp to begin in 2 days, and with me in the studio today is Mr. Dennis Ritz, who is a percussionist extraordinaire and a member of the faculty at the Sharon City School District. And Dennis has been a elementary teacher for how long now?
Going on 22 years.
So this will be your 22nd year?
22nd year, yes. All right.
And he's also working on the Sharon Tiger band staff and has been for the last several years. Actually, this is your second time around on the band staff, right?
Yes, it is, yes.
When did you previously work?
89 to 91.
Who was the band director then?
Andy Cuthie.
All right, very good. So I have Dennis Ritz here in the home studio, and we're going to talk a little bit about percussion and playing professionally, teaching percussion. And so tell us a little bit about yourself, Mr. Ritz.
As far as background?
Whatever you want.
Okay. 43, grew up in Newcastle most of my life, Union Area High School. Attended Grove City College, BA and L.Ed. Playing-wise, I started when I was 10 years old and took private lessons off a guy, incredible guy named Gary Pack, until I was a senior in high school, and then just mostly through college, learning on my own whatever I could. Played 3 years during my BA work at Grove City for the jazz ensemble. Did some small group stuff on the side, played out a little bit, and then did after college, played wedding band, taught music lessons at Music Showcase for a number of years, and played in a country band in that, and then did some lessons on the side. A guy named Kevin Downs out of West, he really taught me a lot about jazz, and then took about a 10-year hiatus from playing, and my wife encouraged me to start up a stomp group like Stomp on Broadway, and that got me back into playing. Then eventually I started playing for a church now called Victory Christian Center for about 5 years. Did a little bit of recording with a guy named Steve Pappas, and eventually got back into the music program with Doug Butchie and Sharon.
That's me.
Yeah, that's him.
In case we didn't know.
Yeah, and right now I play at church, teach one private student, and I work with the Stomp Ensemble and work with the bands at Sharon. So,
I said tell us a little about yourself.
Oh, sorry.
Not your life story.
I tend to extend, yeah.
Well, I was going to ask you, when did you begin playing? You said 10?
10 years old, yeah.
10 years old. What, how did you get into playing first? Was it a regular like elementary band experience?
Or? Yeah, it, and I've never seen anything like this since. They took us into the a room and he said, okay, we're going to be picking our band instruments. We did a listening written type of test and percussion came up to be the thing that I would probably be best suited for. And I started into the program. But I always had, whenever I go to weddings and stuff, I always noticed I gravitated to the side of the stage and watched the drummer.
That's interesting. And that probably, well, and two, that, those experiences probably shaped your,
oh yes,
the way you answered that test, probably subconsciously.
Yes,
in
yes,
some way. And I thought, what was I going to ask you next? That's interesting that you mentioned that test, because that's actually something that I've been wanting to implement the last couple of years.
Yes.
It's just logistically with three elementary buildings, how, right, do you go about doing that?
Right.
So, but I'm glad that you brought that up because that's something I want to do. And then I was going to ask you what drew you to drums, but you know, or percussion. You just said, you know, going at random performances, you see that the instrument being played, and for,
yes,
whatever reason,
yeah,
you're just drawn to that.
Yeah,
I was the same way with saxophone.
Okay.
You know, whenever I would see a band, and when I grew up, my parents listened to a lot of oldies music, and you know, mm-hmm, the hot sax, I like to call it, was featured a lot in oldies tunes and
Boots Randolph,
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah, that kind of stuff. I was always drawn to that. I don't know why.
Yeah,
you know, but I always wanted to play saxophone.
Yeah, and that's when you say that. Growing up, my background, a lot of polka, lot of polka music as a kid.
Western Pennsylvania,
yeah.
Newcastle.
But also variety shows. I was a kid, I noticed other kids would be doing stuff. I wanted to watch like variety shows, Muppet Show, Jim Davis Show, Lawrence Welk. Always, and now it's like I said, just gravitate, but music was always in my house.
Yeah, yeah.
Listening wise.
Yeah, same thing here too.
Yeah.
What, as you were evolving as a player and a musician, who, what pro drummers influenced you?
I'm glad you asked that. Probably the greatest influence on me was a guy named Danny Serafin, who was the original drummer for Chicago.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And my drum teacher steered me toward him. And once I caught on just the fact because it was a rock band with a horn section, because I always loved horns as a kid, that band, just more than any drummer, I copied everything he did. And then, you know, the usuals, the Buddy Rich, I can't even remember his name, but my teacher had me do a lot of playing to albums.
Yeah.
And I would say that, and probably Steve Gadd.
Yeah. And when you copied Serafin?
Yes.
Right? How, when you say copy, how did you go about doing that?
I would get the album, and then I would spend countless nights. Actually, I would turn out the lights and back at that time, I had a pretty.
Did they have electricity then?
Archaic, yeah, yeah. Rabbit with four carrots, you know, keep feeding them the carrots, keep the thing running. But a turntable, and yeah. I would actually go.
A turntable. Now, for our younger viewers, Dennis.
Okay, 33 records, the big. They vinyl. Use for scratching vinyl.
Vinyl, right, okay.
Yeah, but I would actually go in a room. My mom made a music room in the house when she saw how much I was interested in playing, and I would lay in the dark and listen to a song over and over and over, and I would actually try to catch every nuance, and then I would just, you know, in my practice time, just try to do it. And it's interesting because a lot of kids, when I teach them, then I said, okay, here's this little thing you can do on a hi-hat at. And then I tell them, no teacher taught me this, and I'm not trying to be cocky or anything when I say it to the kids, but figuring it out. Mm-hmm. So many things I've learned. On the set particularly, is just figuring it out. But, yeah, that's how I did it.
And the key word, listening.
Listening, constantly listening.
I think students don't understand that enough. That, I mean, I play jazz, and I really like playing jazz, and I think I do a pretty okay job at it.
Definitely.
But
more than okay.
thanks. But I think what really helped me learn how to do that more than any class I took on improvisation or any amount of jazz history that I ever learned was listening, because there's it's a style. I couldn't even, if I wanted to say to you, how do you make a saxophone really sound like a jazz saxophone? Mm-hmm. I couldn't even explain it in words. I would say, go listen to Cannonball Adderley and John Coltrane and Michael Brecker.
Yeah.
Then, and listen to it, not just, hey, I'm going to pick up Kind of Blue and listen to it one time there. I listened to Cannonball and Coltrane at the same time.
Wow.
You have to listen to it over and over, and you just get that sound in your ear.
Yeah, you know? And then that's the thing to, in just encouraging kids, listen to all styles.
Yeah, yeah.
Even if it's something you're not into, because I sometimes, there's certain styles I have a hard time, but and you just get that sense, and I know, not tooting a horn or anything, but whenever I'm on a gig and I'm playing with somebody new, when a song comes up, in my mind, what runs through my mind is, oh, they want that Steely Dan feel.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, oh, they want that Buddy Rich feel. Or they want that, you know, Tower of Power feel. And then from listening so much, then you shift. Because sometimes, honestly, you have to change body position.
Yeah.
Your thought pattern has to change. You know, you think, okay, I got to put on that hood now. Okay, now I got to put on that country feel, you know, and that is so important.
Yeah, it's good to have that experience in different types of music too, because especially more when I played with like Brass Taxi and Second Avenue, we did a really wide range of music, and it was nothing for me to play a big band style solo on one song, and the very next song I have to play a classical style. Yeah, you have to be, if you want to be, you know, a well-versed musician, you have to be familiar with all those styles. I could go, not, I would never do this, but if I had to go up and play like Kenny G style, mm-hmm. I could do it because I've listened to it and I know what it sounds like. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, oh, that's very interesting.
Something I want to allude to, you said earlier, I didn't add it earlier, but one thing I've noticed in reading articles of all major, major musicians is it's all of others have always said they listen.
Yeah, yeah.
They're a listener.
Listening is a huge part of. Yeah. I mean, there's so much that you gain, like I said, that just cannot be put into words. I couldn't even describe the impact that can have on your playing just from listening. And and you know, we talked about jazz and rock mainly here, mm-hmm. but for like students that are playing in concert band, go listen to recordings of great instrumentalists on your instrument.
Yes,
you know, all my trumpet players should know what a classical trumpet is supposed to sound like. If you don't have that sound in your ear, no matter how much I teach you about trumpet technique, there's no way you're ever going to sound like that.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So, and now with iTunes, and increasingly now, this is not a advertisement for iTunes, more and more there are classical recordings appearing on iTunes, and it's awesome. It's exciting.
Wow.
So, and you know, with the internet and digital media now, it's so easy to find recordings for kids. I can remember, I mean, I'm not that old, but when I was in college even, MP3 players didn't even exist.
Right.
You know, so we were listening to portable CD players then, but if I wanted to find a specific recording, I couldn't go on the internet.
Right.
I had to go to the store and buy it.
Right, you know? Right.
And then, even then, especially with jazz stuff, I mean, I couldn't walk into like National Record Mart or FYE
and buy it,
especially if it was something even remotely obscure. So,
right.
Yeah, listening's a big thing. Well, let's take a short break and we'll come right back with some more questions with Dennis Ritz. All right, and we're back with Mr. Dennis Ritz, extraordinaire, Esquire the Third.
Oh, please.
And we've been talking about, a whole lot of things. Your playing experience and the importance of listening. And that was really interesting to me, what you said about how you copied the record was you just sat in a room and closed your eyes and listened to it.
Oh, yeah.
Did you find, I was going to ask you, did you find that every time you listened to it, you'd hear something different?
Yes, and who the drummer was, because honestly, I listened for the drums.
Yeah.
But who they were, taking their nuances off of, who they were following, things like that. One thing I always can remember is I got so into it that I could tell you if the recording was done with the idea of left to right being the true left to right, or, you know, right to left meaning like, are you facing the band or are you with the band?
Right.
I would like, you know, try to see, you know, okay, what direction the horn's coming from and all that.
And I can remember in the recording industry, because the last CD I recorded, Brian Helsel told me this, and I can't remember which it is, but there's a certain way that if you're, especially drums, if you're recording them in stereo, mm-hmm. you're supposed to pan them a certain way.
Yeah.
I can't remember if it's the way you're looking at it or if you were sitting at it.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's interesting because there is a specific way that you're supposed to do it, apparently.
And one thing, too, my teacher always said, and I stand by this still today, is the bass player is the foundation. You know, people always say the drummer is. I disagree.
Yeah.
The bass player is the foundation.
I agree with
that. And, I've just found always in those situations playing, you play off the bass player.
Yeah.
And it's always better.
Yeah.
Rather than you're trying to drive it, because you end up, you know, too many times I've seen guys drive it. They think they're driving the band, and they are just storming Norman, man.
Yeah, and then you have like a musical battle going on.
Yeah, musical battle going on. You know, ego. So,
I was going to ask you a little bit about your professional playing experience. When did you start playing, quote, professionally? In other words, getting paid to play?
I didn't get paid for it, but I did some demo work My drum teacher had a recording studio in his house, and he had a small kind of recording company. And sometimes when a musician coming in and wanted him to do work for them couldn't afford a drummer, he would ask me to play the parts. In fact, I remember once my first official recording that made it out was like from Europe somewhere, some small country in Europe. The guy got a hold of him. And so awesome. I remember cutting.
You're an international recording artist.
Cutting demos for this guy in hearing the rough tracks in a foreign language, but it was cool.
Yeah.
But in high school, I did a little bit of. I played at a wedding or two here or there. College, I played in a band. I played like, the Eagles Club and things like that. But yeah. I'd say that experience about 16 years old was when I started.
Cool. Do you or did you once, because we know that we're very busy people, have a specific practice routine?
Oh, yes. I still do today.
And what is it?
Well, because of now having a family and a job that's not music, I try to make sure I get in 20 minutes. I spend about 5 minutes warm up. I spend about 10 minutes using basically two books, Stick Control and New Breed.
Do you remember who they're by?
Gary Chester, New Breed, Stick Control, not Charles Wilcox. And but it's a classic among drummers. Yeah. But anyway, one basically works hand technique. Keeping the sticks at a good level, and some rudimentary stuff. And then the other one, working on independence of the limbs. And then I usually try to spend 5 minutes. If I'm learning a song for a gig coming up, and usually most of the stuff I do, it's learning just one new song, I will take that song and just play it and play it and play it and try to get all the nuances out and work everything out.
Yeah,
I'll do that. Otherwise, there's certain CDs I'll pick up just to keep a style fresh.
Yeah.
Make sure I can play styles.
When you had mentioned about
stick. I can tell you about my past practice too.
Okay.
When I was college, high school, college, my routine was about 2 to 4 hours a day. 1 hour strictly snare hand technique.
Let's clarify. Was this in one sitting?
Yeah.
Okay. Two to 4 hours in one sitting.
2 to 4 hours in one sitting.
That's impressive.
Yeah. I 1 hour strictly hand technique, books. Then, like the next hour, would be maybe set technique, just working out different set techniques. And then, like 2 hours playing to whatever current album, like I was, or CD at this time, or MP3, whatever. I would just take an album and just shed my technique and try to work through every song of that album.
So, that whole time, you said technique, like, that whole thing, 2 hours just on basic technique.
Yes.
Why is technique so important?
Because for a drummer, the vocabulary is the rudiments. And if you have control of those rudiments and control of independence around the set dynamics, then when it comes time for you to express yourself on the spot or to play, say, a style of music, I don't really get to play that much Latin, but say I'm called to play a salsa or something, that I have the dynamics and the control of the sticks that I can express, that I can, somebody can listen to that and say, oh, that doesn't sound like a rock drummer playing Latin.
Right.
Man, that guy really sounds like he's Latin.
Yeah. And it's the same thing, like on a wind instrument, why did I spend the first, half hour of every time I sat down to practice my horn, why did I work on my major scales?
Right,
It's the technique. And once, I think too often students say, okay, I'm working on Birdland is my opener for marching band. I'm going to sit down and I got to practice my trumpet. So I'm going to sit down with Birdland and practice for an hour. Well, that's not necessarily the way you want to go about it. Right. Yes, sit, practice Birdland, but spend the first half hour playing all your major scales.
Yeah.
Because that is the basis for everything else that you're ever going to play, mm-hmm. ever, whether right. it's marching band or concert band or jazz band. And you got to get that technique down first, or you might, it, or practicing the music without that is just a waste of time.
Yeah, and I have to say, too, teaching drum lessons, I'm not schooled in the melodic end of percussion. I wish I was, but I cannot say enough that I've seen, after all the years I've been in it, a drummer really needs to start out the first year and a half, 2 years, just snare drum.
Yeah.
Getting good. Now, if they're in one of those programs, I know, like you do with the band program, you can do that thing where the kid's learning bells as well, snare. That's cool. You know, do that. But these people who they go, oh, we'll buy Johnny a drum set for Christmas because he loves drums. I've seen it ruin so many drummers because they think, oh, this snare stuff's boring. And I can't, yeah. I want to play set, but they don't realize without the tools,
right?
It doesn't happen, and then we end up struggling. They struggle.
You hear that, parents? Don't get the drum set, just get the snare drum.
Just get the snare first.
Yeah, you got to get the technique down first. Yeah, or
get a teacher.
Yeah, yeah.
No offense against you band directors,
You band directors.
No,
but no
you,
offense.
No,
but, band directors.
What happened, my story is, now I learned in the time of, you guys out there know, a traditional grip where the left hand is different than the right.
Right.
I
like
went,
chopsticks in the left hand.
Yeah. I went four months with a band director first. I copied his technique, went to a teacher. It took him a year to year and a half to break all the bad habits I learned in that time. So,
well, you can't top a specialist on that instrument.
No, you can't.
Unless your band director is a percussionist.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or
you have to expect that. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
But that's why I have you, to make sure that I'm doing everything right.
Right.
Yeah.
This guy's good.
That's why I pay you the big bucks.
Yeah. This guy's good.
Trust what guy?
Me. You.
Oh. You are too kind,
hey.
Sir. Okay, so we talked about practice routine there. And right now, do you teach privately?
Just one student right now.
And do you still incorporate that, more or less that same kind of routine? What kind of routine do you lay out for your private students?
I
know it would depend on ability and age, but
30 minutes. Mm-hmm. Now, the student I have now is doing set and snare, and I just tell him, no matter what, because my student doesn't have a problem going down and practicing, but I 15 minutes snare, 15 minutes set, and I have them in two books right now. And I just keep, when a student comes to the point, if your teacher tells you start playing the CDs, let's start working on CDs, do it.
Yeah,
you need, it's so important to get starting to, plus once you learn enough on the set, a book can teach you so much.
Right.
Playing along to CDs, listening to other drummers is really what will take you to the next level.
Yeah. I have one more question for you.
Sure.
What is in your CD player right now? In other words, what are you listening to right now?
Right now, I am listening to Medeski, Martin, and Wood. You're going to have to help me because we spit back and forth. The children's album, it's called.
Oh, Let's Go Everywhere.
Let's Go Everywhere. Yeah. And also... in my is a contemporary Christian CD, Third Day Offerings, that's in my CD player also.
Cool. That's one of my favorite questions. I was telling my wife earlier that when I was in college, I discovered so many new musicians and recordings that way. We'd be talking about whatever, and I said, "Well, what are you listening to right now?" And I discovered a whole lot of new music that way. So.
And that's one thing I would encourage young players. Ask the older guys, ask your teachers what CDs, what core foundational style CDs should I have in my collection. Yeah, yeah. And believe me, they will be excited to tell you because they want to share. But there are certain ones you need to have in your collection.
Yeah, especially depending on what instrument you're playing.
Definitely.
Or if you're interested in jazz, or what, whatever, you're most interested in, there's a list for each whatever you want. We can give you a list of go buy this, you know.
And I have to say now, I'm seeing it like he just at Walmart. There's a certain companies that are doing best of, and those are great for teaching tools. I know it's mostly rock and country and that, but those are great to have as far as a quick reference.
Yeah, especially if you're just starting to build a a collection of certain type of music or whatnot.
Right,
so.
Right.
Well, Dennis, anything you'd like to add to this?
Practice. Be humble. Be willing to learn, and also be willing to stretch yourself. If you're a student, and your band teacher says, "Hey, I'd like you to try this. Try it. Don't hold back. Push it." Because you'd be amazed what you might inspire in yourself or go on to do. I would just strongly encourage you. And for you drummers out there, learn how to read and learn the rudiments. But Learn how to read music.
Well, learn how to read printed
word
as well.
Learn how to read print. Yeah.
That would be
break
good.
Away from Dr. Seuss, baby.
Yeah, yeah, that's really important. Yeah. So. All right. Well, thank you, Dennis, very much. It's been enjoyable. Yeah. Appreciate
thank
it.
You. It's
and
been a privilege.
Next time we'll talk about Modesky, Martin, and Wood more in depth.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. Dennis Ritz, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, sir. And thank you, everyone, for listening. My name is Doug Bucci. We will see you next time.